the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery. The Challenge of Transdisciplinary Science. A production of the 2012 Emerging Interfaces Awards. Episode 5, Systems Biology.
I'm John Yin, leader of the Systems Biology team at the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery. And I'm also a faculty member here at the university in chemical and biological engineering. We reside on the third floor of the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery. We take up the western half of the building. So if you look at the building, you'll see there are three pods on every floor, some 70 feet by 70 feet that are devoted to either wet labs or computation or some mix of the two. Systems biology is a mix of the two. We have one pod that is a wet lab where we can move fluids around and study cells and viruses. And we also have a half of a pod devoted to computation and modeling. We have roughly 20 people currently involved in various aspects of the theme. In my own lab, we have 13 students, a postdoc. An interesting feature of the lab is that we're coming from diverse areas. Two of the students are purely computational, collaborating with a chemical engineer, Jim Rawlings, who has expertise in control theory and dynamical systems. We also have a graduate student who's in cell and molecular biology, who has seen the light and has decided it's important to learn something about quantitative approaches to biology. And we also have actually an MD who is very interested in thinking about anti-cancer therapeutics based on the use of viruses to selectively kill cancer cells. So we have an interesting mix of mostly chemical engineers who are building on their training in the engineering to learn more about virology. I'm often asked, what is systems biology? And one way to think about it is biology that aspires to be meteorology. Meteorology, you can think of as weather prediction. You pull up your newspaper and you see the prediction for the next 3 or 4 days. It's going to be sunny, it's going to be cold, it's going to be rainy. Where does such a prediction come from? Well, you've got to have measurements and you've got to have models. That's what you need to do weather prediction. Measurements, what is the current temperature? Not only the temperature here, but temperature anywhere you want to make predictions. So all over the United States, you see that nice map of the cloud coverage and various temperatures. There are all sorts of measurements that are being made. Pressure systems, temperatures, humidity, storm systems. All of these are input at a given time. Input into what? Well, input into some kind of a model, some kind of a description of how things move, like how air moves or how water moves, how storm systems move. So we've got the measurements there. We've got models. You put the measurements into a big computer that has encoded the models. And you ask the computer to say, well, this is our current measurement. What's it going to be in an hour? What'll it be in a day? What might it be in 3 or 4 days? So the computer takes those current measures and says, based on those models, here's what we'll do. For the mathematicians in the audience, it means you're integrating forward. You're asking, what is the prediction based on these fundamental models? So the models are based on physics and chemistry, principles that we've long known for several hundred years in some cases. And the limitation is that 200 years ago, we didn't have the measurements and we didn't have computers to be able to do these sorts of predictions. Nowadays, in the biology, the analogy is that you want to make lots of measurements and you want to try to figure out what the models should be. So when you go to your doctor, you have a blood test done and you learn about a variety of different variables going on in your blood, or you have your blood pressure taken. He or she might look into your eyes or do any number of qualitative or quantitative readouts on you. And if you're sick, he or she may want to say something about how long it'll take for you to get well based on some diagnosis. But what we'd like to be able to do is say what's happening a month from now, a year from now, or maybe 10 years from now. We'd like to be able to predict what is your health going to be and are there things we can do to enhance it or facilitate fast recovery from illness. So we can make measurements. We'd like to make a lot more. And we can begin to perhaps build models. But we don't know the biology yet, which we know the physics and chemistry for weather prediction. In weather prediction, you've got flows of air, flows of humidified air. In biology, you've got also flows of materials. You know, we pump blood around, but there's also flows of information. And a lot of the systems biology, one of the big questions is, how do you write models for how information flows? You might not look at yourself and think of there's much information, but within each of your cells, there's this thing called a genome, which is the information that your parents provided to you when you were just a fertilized egg. So that information somehow interacts with its environment and helps not only to tell that fertilized egg how to develop into that organism that emerges from your mother after 9.5 months, that information also is something that you carry with you for the rest of your life. And it's something that interacts with your environment and decides whether or not, or has some influence on your state of health. The information also includes or interacts with what you eat, whether or not you exercise, how you sleep. All of those are factors that will ultimately influence your health. So these are components of what we'd like to ultimately predict. How do you get from the information and its interaction with your environment to say something about your health? That's all well and good, but it's hard to do that. You know, we humans have maybe 25,000 genes in our genomes, information within each of our cells. Different cells access a subset of that information at any given time. So your brain cells can be different from your heart cells, different from your skin cells. They're all tapping into that information and activating different components of it. But we as engineers are just trying to take the most baby steps now to figure out how to make predictions of how information flows in biological systems. And what we do is choose initially organisms that are not as complex as the human. The big goal is to be able to take you and your genome and say something about your health. But we think one has to start with simpler organisms. And one of the ways we've taken this approach is to start with viruses, which carry, rather than 25,000 genes, a virus might carry 5 or 10 genes. Yet it also, like our genome, the genome within a virus, it's made out of similar material. It also transfers or is read by similar kinds of machinery as the machinery in the cell. Indeed, the virus, in order to grow, needs to get into a living cell and hijack that machinery. So we've gone to viruses and said, for every virus that carries a genome, we'd like to be able to say, how well will you grow? What sort of environment you need? What helps you to thrive or not thrive? So you might say we'd like to make predictions on the health of a virus or its ability to grow or not grow. And you can imagine that if we can make such predictions, then maybe we can find ways to encourage unhealthy lifestyles of viruses, that is, viruses that go to extinction. For us who want to stop infectious diseases, things like AIDS or the flu, or cancer. In some cases, cancers can be caused by viruses too. Knowing something about what helps viruses to thrive or be inhibited can be beneficial. So we've started off our program in my own research group, trying to build predictive models of how viruses grow. It is still quite new for a number of fields to be collaborating, for experimentalists to be collaborating with computational scientists. So we're still learning. Part of the challenge there is coming up with the same language or understanding what one means when one says something like, I build models or I do quantitative experiments. Oftentimes, it's just finding the language that is not jargon-filled that allows people across disciplines to understand the concepts. In my own area, I see myself as a bridge between mathematicians who might not speak so much of the biology language and the biologists who speak a lot of the biology language, but perhaps very little of the mathematical language. So we're in some ways translators. I think it's too soon to say whether or not this experiment, interdisciplinary, transdisciplinary, there are multiple levels. I think in some ways that's what makes it both a challenge but a huge opportunity. If it weren't a challenge, everyone would be doing this and you would see the research moving forward in new ways immediately. So there is a challenge, but the opportunity is that if you can find this common language, if you can cast your problems in ways that either you or someone else can solve or assist in solving, then you make progress.
This recording was produced by Chris Bocast for the 2012 Emerging Interfaces Awards, sponsored by the Wisconsin Institute for Discovery.